This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Big primary wins for the progressive left and the Trumpist right, with some votes outstanding and potentially headed for a recount. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Kate Batchelder-Odell and editorial writer Manet Ukwe-Barua. Welcome to you both. Tuesday's primaries included races in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Idaho, Kentucky, and Oregon, but let's focus on a couple of the big races in Pennsylvania that we've previously discussed, and starting with the governor's race. After two terms of Democratic Governor Tom Wolf, this should be a pretty good pickup opportunity for the GOP, but the question is whether the nominee will be electable. The latest results show State Senator Doug Mastriano with a convincing victory of 44% over a crowded field. And to the people who say that he's extreme, here was Mr. Mastriano's reply on Tuesday night.
They like to call people who stand on the Constitution far right and extreme. I repudiate that. That is crap. That is absolutely not true. Actually, their party, which the media stands for and advocates for, they've gone extreme. They're the ones that sent the sick back in their homes, their policies, Democrat policies, and killed so many. That's extreme. That's extreme forcing your kids to mask up. That's extreme forcing healthcare workers to lose their job from not getting a jab. Our view for Pennsylvania is one of hope and freedom, that people come here and walk as they see fit, not as some governor or some media hack sees fit.
Kate, what do you make of this race? And leaving the labeling aside, far right, extreme, whatever, is Mastriano going to have an uphill climb, do you think, to win in November, given the positions that he's taken?
Kyle, I do think this is an uphill climb in what should be a more winnable year for Republicans, as you mentioned. I think Mastriano consolidated some of the Trump vanguard with also some evangelical voters. He speaks in explicitly religious themes on all of his campaign stops, and I think he has gotten some traction among the committed Republican base in Pennsylvania. The question is, you know, that can apparently get you over 40% in a primary, but how does it do in a general election? I think that's going to be a much tougher hill to climb, and he emerges having been in a contested primary, whereas his Democratic opponent is ran unopposed, Josh Shapiro, and so comes in without that difficulty or baggage. I mean, there were some unique features of this race, Kyle. Trump endorsed late Mastriano, and I think was trying to ride what looked like clear victory for Mastriano by that point. Trump also anti-endorsed Bill McSwain, one of the candidates. McSwain had gotten crosswise with Trump over the 2020 election results. And so there were some unique dynamics in that result that I think helped Mastriano, but it looked more like Trump was just trying to, you know, endorse the winner by the end of it. But I do think, Kyle, this will be more difficult for Republicans to hold in the fall when all other indicators look like it should be a good year for them. I mean, one thing that I think is always really important to remember, and we'll talk about the Pennsylvania Senate race later, is that Trump and Pat Toomey both carried Pennsylvania in 2016, but they did so on entirely different coalitions. Trump overperformed in rural areas, and Toomey outperformed Trump in Bucks County and suburban Philadelphia. Both carried the state, but with a different group of voters. So I think we should talk more about what voters these candidates might attract and how they might replicate those coalitions, because I see some issues here going forward in the fall for them to succeed.
Well, I guess I would point to a couple of the positions that Mastriano has staked out. One of them, of course, is his skepticism of the results of the 2020 election and his continued focus on that. He said he wants to end the state's contract with, quote, compromised voting machine companies, unquote. He wants to do away with mail balloting in Pennsylvania without an excuse. He wants to reset the voter rolls, he recently said, so everybody in the state would have to re-register to vote. Another one is abortion, which of course is on everybody's minds because of the Supreme Court case being heard right now that could overturn Roe v. Wade. And Mastriano had sponsored a bill to ban abortion at 6 weeks At a recent debate, he was asked whether he would include any exceptions for rape or incest or to protect the life of the mother, and he said, "I don't give way for exceptions," unquote. And so, Monet, I just don't know if that's where the Pennsylvania electorate is, and you don't have to listen to just me. The nonpartisan Cook Political Report has moved this governor's race out of the toss-up column now and into the Leans Democratic column because of Mastriano's win.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Mastriano is further to the right and, in general, much more controversial than your average Pennsylvania voter would prefer, and particularly those swing voters. I mean, if you look at the polls, of course, Mastriano is underperforming the generic ballot by about 7 points. So in a head-to-head, it seems as if swing voters are preferring a Republican candidate by, you know, about, you know, 7 points or so. Whereas if you look at the head-to-head between Mastriano and Shapiro, who he's going to run against, it becomes much tighter. And I believe Shapiro actually has the advantage there. And so it really is a case where Republicans have hurt themselves and their prospects of holding on to that seat by going with the candidate who just was closer aligned with Trump.
Another dynamic that's playing out here is that Democrats are saying that a Governor Mastriano would be a threat to democracy because in Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State is appointed by the governor. And so that's the person who would certify the 2024 election. And the question that they're raising is, if President Trump decides to run in 2024, and if he loses Pennsylvania again, would Governor Mastriano and would his Secretary of State, would they certify that loss? Or would they argue, as they did in 2020, that there was some sort of fraud, even though the evidence for 2020, at least, has not come out to substantiate that? But the thing that makes this so interesting, Kate, is that Josh Shapiro, the Democratic nominee, the Attorney General, ran ads that were essentially trying to help Mastriano get the nomination. And so it seems like he wanted that. He thought that Mastriano would be the easiest candidate to beat. But you never know how politics is going to go. And it seems like, at least to me, that that's playing with fire. And recall that there were some Democrats who were very enthused when President Trump won the Republican nomination in 2016. And we all know how that turned out.
Yeah, Kyle, getting involved in the other party's primary is always a risk. And I think one thing to add to your list of concerns there is that now one of the big concerns about Mastriano having prevailed in the governor's primary is how that will affect races down ballot for the state legislature, which would obviously have a huge influence on what Mastriano is able to do and to what extent he's able to implement some of those voting reforms or some of his other ideas. So I think there is a concern for those down ballot candidates and keeping and whether the Republicans can control the state legislature. I do think, though, some of that concern is premature. We don't know if Trump is going to run again in 2024. I assume there is a ample opportunity for relief in the courts if the Secretary of State was to do something like that. I also think that some of these candidates find it very easy to shoot from the hip on the campaign trail and that it can be harder to do so when they take office. So I think the optimistic take here would be that some of those conditions don't develop, but it certainly is a concern. And I think it speaks to why Republicans really need to move on from 2020. As Mike Pence put it in a speech not too long ago, you know, "I understand the disappointment of losing in 2020. I was on the ballot, but it is not a winning strategy for elections going forward." And so I am skeptical even that it's going to be a winning strategy for Mastriano to win over Shapiro at this point.
One small hobby horse I would ride here is Pennsylvania is one of these states where they're not allowed to pre-process absentee ballots, mail votes, until the morning of Election Day. And that's part of the reason that in 2020 we had so many late votes coming in, which is one of the things that Mastriano and others point to when they say that there was fraud in the election. And if we have that again in November and Mastriano loses, could he claim that the 2022 elections were stolen as well? And so I think there's a good argument here for the state legislature to pass a quick, narrow bill to let county clerks, local clerks, pre-process these ballots, and let's try to get some results from Pennsylvania on election night in November. That would be very helpful to my mind. Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Let's turn to the Pennsylvania Senate race. And first, the Republican primary, still undecided as we are taping this. The latest results show Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, with about 31.3% of the vote. Slightly below him, Dave McCormick with about 31.1% of the vote. And then Kathy Barnett, this candidate who had a late surge, not quite enough to get over the top, 24.8% of the vote. And we have two clips here, the first from Dr. Oz and the second from Dave McCormick, both sounding pretty hopeful. Listen to this.
Let's start with 45, President Trump. Yeah! After he endorsed me, continued to lean into this race in Pennsylvania. He knows all the subtleties of it. He was willing to participate with teletown halls, which he advised that I do. It was a brilliant idea. He participated in a massive rally out in Westmoreland County. And God bless you, sir, for putting so much effort into this race. I will make you proud.
Tomorrow, right now, we have tens of thousands of mail-in ballots that have not been counted, that are going to need to be counted beginning tomorrow. And so that, unfortunately, we're not going to have resolution tonight, but we can see the path ahead, we can see victory ahead, and it's all because of you.
So as I said, Dr. Oz is up by just a couple thousand votes as we tape this, but it looks like, Manet, that some areas that are left uncounted are strongholds for Dave McCormick. And so it looks like just about anything could happen here, and we will probably end up going into a recount.
That sounds right. I suppose it would be unwise of us to pronounce on who's going to be the likely winner here because the margin is still so narrow. But I think that as Oz was describing in that clip, his surge in the last couple of weeks of the primary campaign is yet another data point for the influence that Trump is still having over some of these primary fields. It's not true in every single race, and the effect that he's able to have differs from region to region. There are certain places like Ohio where Trump is very popular and therefore very influential, and other places where he doesn't seem to have had that much influence. But Oz was certainly not leading the field, you know, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, and that endorsement did really seem to put quite a lot of wind in his sails. I think it's interesting to look at the history of Pennsylvania electorally because, of course, Trump was able to pull off a surprise victory in the 2016 general election there, and there is some hope that the state is trending in a Republican direction in a way that would potentially boost the electoral prospects of whoever comes out of the Senate primary and also potentially even Mastriano. But I do think it's important to remember that the political climate has changed quite a lot since 2016. Yes, Republicans are leading on the generic ballot, as I mentioned, but I do think that Trump's close in 2020, leaning into the sort of stop the steal election fraud narrative, has made the Republican brand a little less palatable to some of these swing voters. And so the idea that Trump is going to be the brand, the main brand associated with at least the gubernatorial candidate and possibly the Senate candidate if Oz wins, is going to potentially be more of a burden on them than they would have faced in a regular midterm election year.
I agree with Manet here that Dr. Oz's performance suggests that President Trump's endorsement still holds a lot of sway for many Republican voters. And I would add, I think that may be also true of Kathy Barnett's underperformance, because remember, she was surging late. Then President Trump came out and said that he doesn't think she can win the general election. And so maybe that helped blunt her surge. And yet there is still some real strength in what you might characterize as the traditional GOP. Dave McCormick, with about a third of the vote, he's had a career in finance, a former undersecretary of the Treasury. He's probably the guy who is most like Pat Toomey, the senator that he hopes to replace. So we'll have to see how the recount comes out. But on the Democratic side in this Senate primary, also interesting, Kate, John Fetterman, a strong progressive, just trouncing the centrist opponent, Connor Lamb. What do you make of this?
Well, Kyle, I think here, to your point about David McCormick, he really does have some traditional Republican qualities that may do well the way that Pat Toomey did. To add his list of biographical notes, he is a Gulf War veteran as well and an Army Ranger. And he also has spent his campaign emphasizing the issues that I think are most potent for the fall, one of which is inflation and the problems in the economy. Another is the rising threat from China. Another is energy prices and energy independence. All of these are really potent, and they are things that voters really care about. It looks to me like he is trying to learn from the successes of Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and how he managed to win the gubernatorial race there. So that is what it looks like to me. And I think ironically, Kyle, to your point about Kathy Barnett, her surge may have been blunted, but she also may have siphoned off a lot of votes from Dr. Oz. So Trump's play here may have not worked exactly as he imagined. I do think Barnett was the candidate with the most unknowns and potential liabilities. And so I think Republicans have avoided a potentially difficult situation by not nominating her. As for Fetterman, who, to your point, cleaned up against Connor Lamb pretty easily, he is a fascinating candidate to watch. He has cultivated an image as a working class guy, a man of the people, but he also has two master's degrees, one of which is from Harvard. So I think Republicans have been pointing out that this is a little bit of a gimmick and a shtick, but I do think he will have a tough time in a good year for Republicans as he is so willing to basically associate with Bernie Sanders. And whether that will be popular with the median voter in Pennsylvania, I just find that hard to credit.
To add a little bit to that, Fetterman is a supporter of Medicare for All. He says that weed should be legal nationwide. He calls the union way of life sacred. And he is winning this primary with about 59% of the vote, compared to Connor Lamb having about 27%. Connor Lamb is a congressman. He's a young Marine veteran. He's a centrist. And he was thought to be a rising star in the Democratic Party. So, Monet, part of what I think is notable about this is we hear a lot about the polarization on the right side of the aisle and the success of these Trumpist candidates. But it looks like a similar sort of dynamic is being mirrored on the left side of the aisle, where you have centrist congressmen being beat out by a strong Bernie Sanders-style progressive who wants a Medicare for All system in the United States.
Right. I mean, we've seen the strength of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party throughout the entire course of the Biden administration up until this point. Biden himself ran as a political moderate. He was able to emerge from a crowded field and eventually beat Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primary based on presenting himself as just kind of the sane alternative to Trump, someone who wasn't going to rock the boat too much, who would be sort of pushing for kind of traditional Democratic Party policies as opposed to trying to race the party further to the left. And yet upon being elected president, he's been basically hampered by the activist wing and had to pursue policies, particularly in the form of Build Back Better, which would push the country in a very far left direction. And so I think it's interesting to look at the race between Fetterman and Lamb as an interesting test point of which way the Democratic Party might be trending. Because Democrats have been talking for a long time about the ways that Republicans were able to sort of carve into Democrats' former white working class base in a lot of these Rust Belt areas of the country, which certainly includes Western Pennsylvania. And you had almost a perfect sort of test in the distinction between Lamb and Fetterman, because Fetterman, at a personal level, clearly does sort of reflect kind of a more working class sort of style of politics, but his policies are extremely progressive, and you just rattled them off, support for Medicare for All, things like that. I guess fracking might be one exception. He's a little bit open to the idea of sort of allowing fracking to take place, but basically, he's on board with the Bernie Sanders wing of the party, whereas Lamb, as Kate mentioned, he has sort of a more kind of establishment presentation, but his policies are somewhat more moderate. And so in that choice between do we pick the sort of a working class candidate in style with radical progressive policies or the establishment candidate in style with more moderate policies, Pennsylvania Democrats really decisively chose that they are on board, at least somewhat, with progressive policies, and maybe they're just hoping that that will come in a more relatable and sort of working class style package. But either way, it just shows that Democrats, despite the bad prospects that they're facing in the midterm elections, aren't really leaning into, let's moderate our policy approach for the sake of potentially sort of restoring some of our electoral gains.
And there are other data points of this progressive strength as well. One that I would point to is Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district. And that race is not called yet. It's very close, but the candidate who's ahead is Summer Lee. She is endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She seems like she would probably be the latest member of the squad. She also wants Medicare for all. Her website says our immigration system is a broken web of xenophobic policies that seek to punish brown and black people instead of building pathways to citizenship. And in the latest results that we have, she is up by about 450 votes with 42% roughly of the ballots. There's about 94% reported, so that could go either way. But Kate, the fact that this is a close race and that a candidate saying things like that could potentially win a congressional seat or at least a nomination in Pittsburgh, I think says something about where those Democrats in Pittsburgh, where their minds are ideologically these days.
Yes, I mean, we're certainly getting a taste of the sour mood voters appear to be in. I think another example of that is what's going on in Oregon's 5th congressional district. The Democratic incumbent, Kurt Schrader, is facing a progressive primary challenger, and he has lost by double digits and was branded the Joe Manchin of Oregon by his challenger. And that seems to have been relatively potent with voters. I mean, this is the difficulty, though, as these parties polarize and start to pick people who are not acceptable to the majority of the electorate. You'll get a mix of winners, but it will be much harder to govern and much harder to accomplish anything, let alone some of the things progressives want to accomplish, let alone passing Build Back Better. This is an odd strategy to me if you want to make the most of President Biden's second half of his first term. It seems like the Democrats are on track to give up more seats and not learn any of the lessons of the first 2 years of their failure to pass their agenda and Build Back Better. So I'm expecting that we'll see more of this polarization here going on in all of these districts, and it will be to the detriment of Congress getting anything done for the next 2 years.
One final election to mention in North Carolina's 11th district, the Republican primary, Madison Cawthorn, the 26-year-old congressman who had been controversial for all sorts of reasons, comments he had made, tried to bring a loaded gun to an airplane, all sorts of things like that, has lost his reelection. And so instead, the voters have picked Chuck Edwards, a 61-year-old businessman, a state senator. Monet, to my mind, this is just an example of voters being fed up with the controversy, wanting somebody who will advance their policies instead of making news for comments he's on the record with. And sounds like some political hygiene for the Republican Party. And we'll give you the last word.
Well, I don't have too much to add to that. I think Cawthorn's scandals, gaffes, things like that have gotten almost too numerous to count and certainly have started to blend together in my head. And on the other side of that, he certainly hasn't done a great deal to advance any particular policy solutions for the voters who sent him to Congress a couple years ago. And so it doesn't surprise me to see that North Carolina voters would think, surely we can do better than this guy, and decided pretty decisively in that primary to nominate Chuck Edwards, and he'll probably have a pretty easy walk to holding that seat in November.
Thank you, Monet and Kate. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.